Hey everybody, and welcome back to No Fates, a Terminator podcast where we cover any and all things Terminator. I'm your host, Michael John Petty. With me is my co-host, Tanner Radwick. Tanner, we're talking about it. We're here.
We are.
I'm so pumped. I'm so pumped for this episode.
This is the one.
We're talking about the Sarah Connor Chronicles episode, Mr. Ferguson is Ill Today, which is the eighth episode of the second season. But before we get into that, as much as I want to contain my excitement, we do have some fan mail, which is great. We love getting fan mail. We love hearing from you guys, what you guys think about our show, but more importantly, what you think about Terminator. So our first one is from Wendy McCullough. And Wendy says, how did I not know about this show sooner? You guys rock. I'm a huge Terminator fan, on the brink of carrying the original Sarah Connor picture Kyle had in my wallet and getting a No Fate tattoo. LOL.
That's amazing.
I have all the movies and read all the books. Oh, that's great. And I'm looking into the graphic novels. Tanner, you and I were just talking about this, how we want to cover the comics at some point, but we're afraid people won't read them with us.
I think we got our answer.
We got our answer. Well, she continues and says, I'm enjoying your insights and discussions on the movies and TV show. Thank you for this podcast. Well, you are so welcome, Wendy. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate that.
Super cool. Glad that you discovered something that maybe you didn't have before. And especially with how much bad content there is, I think, or maybe just not living up to the legacy content, I should say. So, right.
Yeah,
the fact that you're getting to enjoy the Sarah Connor Chronicles just makes me super happy, because I think that was a big goal for us going into this too, was to promote that, because not enough people know about it.
It's true.
I didn't know about it for a long time. You had to bring me into it. So, no, it means a lot. It makes me happy that more people are watching it.
I totally agree. And it really makes me excited to know that it's not just the movies and the show, like the live action visual content that people are interested in when it comes to Terminator. People are interested in the books. They're interested in the graphic novels and the comics. They're interested in the video games and this upcoming anime. Like, they just love the franchise just like we do. And that's really exciting that we have listeners who care enough about it, who will stick with us. Even when we're done with all the movies and the shows. Not that we'll ever be fully done, obviously, but more done than we are now. Well done, you would say. But yes, anyway.
there is no fate but what we make, Michael. So
that is
no
true.
Fate podcast. There is no fate for it. We'll see.
That's true. I mean, we'll go until the apocalypse comes, so, you know.
That's right.
And then probably.
And then if you are listening to it still, then you truly are the resistance.
Amen. So. It'll be a very different podcast then. Okay, that said, we have one more for this week, and it comes from Khalil Rahman. I hope I pronounced that right. Hello, my name is Khalil. You may also know me from my questions on Twitter, where I am at @iHeartSarahConnorChronicles. Oh, we've been interacting with the name T900TOK715. If you don't know, TOK715 is the name of Cameron's organic template, like Arnold's CSM101. Oh, that's so interesting.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, I wanted to say thank you. Thank you, Michael and Tanner, for raising awareness for this incredible series. As I have discovered your podcast about a week and a half ago, I have instantly fallen for it. I wish you both well, and good luck to you and your wife, Michael, you know, in regards of the child. Thank you. Also, I wanted to show you the link below, in which I did a poll on Reddit regarding post-T2 sequels, and it shows that even though this show is small in regards of people knowing about it, it's still strongly preferred by many over the others, even though I love those in their own special way. Keep it up, guys, and good luck once again, Mr. and Mrs. Petty. Love you guys. Sincerely, Khalil. Well, thank you. We appreciate that, and my wife and I really appreciate that. That's so interesting. I didn't know that about Cameron's organic template number. That must be something either. We missed.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. Fun little tidbit. Also cool hearing about the Reddit poll numbers too. You and I were even talking about polls and wanting to start doing some.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that we're really looking forward to possibly doing, so we just got to figure all that out. But Reddit is something we have talked about. And I am looking at your poll on here, Khalil. What is your favorite preferred sequel post T2? And out of the 468 votes, guess what won?
Well,
I have to be honest, I'm surprised.
I don't know. I mean, I would be happy if it was a Sarah Connor Chronicles. I would feel like it would have to be three just based on that. I think that was the most viewed, and the others were more poorly received, I think, but maybe not. I don't know. Was it the Sarah Connor Chronicles?
No, it was T3. You were right. I would have guessed the Sarah Connor Chronicles personally, but it wasn't. It was T3 at 134 votes. And then Terminator Salvation got 127 votes, so it came in second place, which is really interesting, though,
because though you almost have to consider those the same, though.
Right.
Because Salvation is an extension of 3.
Right.
As opposed to an alternate timeline.
Exactly. And then the Sarah Connor Chronicles gets 115 votes, so it's third place easily. Dark Fate gets 72 votes. And 20 people voted for Genesis. Who are you?
Bots.
Bots, yeah, it's probably Terminators. Oh, some people in the comments said Terminator Resistance, though, which is the video game.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, fair. That one's really good. It was funny when I was looking up reviews for that game, Terminator Resistance, before I got it, some people in the comments did say, "The only canon I accept is Terminator 1 and 2 and Terminator Resistance." So yeah. That just speaks really highly to how well that game was received.
It's true. I did actually get a tweet from Khalil earlier this week, actually yesterday at the time of recording, who asked, "Did you guys read the website fan mail before the podcast, or how do you guys read them for the first time? Or do you guys read them for the first time while doing the podcast?" And for you, it's always the first time.
It is. Yep.
For me, it goes back and forth. Sometimes I read them beforehand. Sometimes we just jump into it. It just depends. I didn't really read either of these. Well, that's not true. I read the first one kind of beforehand because it came in over a week ago. But hers, I read. Or his? I don't know. I don't want to misgender someone again. I did that last time.
Yeah.
Let me know. Are you a boy or a girl? But yeah, so we've been interacting a lot on Twitter, though. It's great. Super big Sarah Connor fan, which is really cool. So really appreciate that, obviously. So thank you guys for sending in your fan mail. We, again, really appreciate it. We appreciate getting to hear from you all. And again, send us your thoughts on the episodes that we're covering. Send us your thoughts on the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Obviously, today we're covering Season 2, Episode 8. But maybe start sending your thoughts in ahead of time for other episodes that you know we're doing. We'd be happy to address questions.
Save them for when they come.
Yeah.
If you guys are watching ahead, you know, send it in and we'll save it for when we get to that episode.
Yeah, totally. So, but without further ado, we're going to jump into our coverage on the episode, Mr. Ferguson is Ill Today. Marty kidnaps Sarah and races to Mexico to find John. When Derek, Cameron, and Ellison discover what has happened, they come to their defense, which leads to one final deadly confrontation with Cromartie. I'm really disappointed that the description didn't say one final Mexican standoff with Cromartie, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, the old Mexican standoff.
This episode got a 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, which I think it might be the highest rated episode.
That sounds pretty high.
I can double check that real quick. I'll fact check myself. But it might be. It's definitely the highest rated, I think, of this season.
It's fair. I'd agree with that.
Tanner, what are your initial thoughts on this episode?
Well, and you know, this is the third time that I've seen this episode, so I kind of like to compare it to when I first saw it, to maybe my second watch through with my wife, and then watching it, you know, more critically now too.
Sure.
I remember when I first watched it, I think you had prepped me a little bit that this one was your favorite. So I was really excited when it first came up, and it's so different from all the other ones, right? Because
Right.
you're like, it's getting broken up immediately into different perspectives, and you immediately go, oh, it's gonna be told like this. Interesting. Let's see how they use this. I remember really liking it a lot the first time I saw it, and I still really like it. The more you watch it, and that's, you know, just from watching it, you more know already how it's going to go.
Yeah.
So some of that specialness does get taken away,
I agree.
you know, the gimmick of it. But when you don't know what's going to happen, it works so good and it's so much fun. I think the only downside for me when I watched it this time, since I kind of know how it goes, the cuts, you know, it's a unique way to tell the story, but at the same time, you really could tell the same story without making it so deliberately, this is this person's story, this is this
Totally.
person's story. You
T
could, you really
totally.
could edit it to just do like a normal episode. But they didn't. They chose to show it very separated. And but it's fun. I like it. I like it a lot. I like how it breaks up the season a little bit to give you something different. And aside from that, the story itself, which we'll also talk about, is just a really good one.
Yeah. I think at this point, the Sarah Connor Chronicles has been building to this from the pilot, right? Like this is what we've been waiting for. We've been waiting for this final confrontation between the Connors and Cromartie ever since he traveled with them through time to the then present of 2007, 2008. And I don't think it disappoints. I think I agree with you that I definitely preferred this episode the very first time I saw it, just because everything was so new and shocking and I was very on edge. And I think that's why they made the editing choice that they did to separate it into everyone's stories, because I really think it makes you uneasy. Like it breaks things up in a way that makes you not only uncomfortable because it's new and it's not what the show does, but also it makes you wonder, okay, what's going to happen next? Why are we jumping perspectives? Who is going to die? You know, or something like that. And I think when you've seen it more than once, and I've seen this episode probably 5 or 6 times, when you've seen it more than once, you go into it knowing full well what's going to happen. So I think it does lose some of that specialness. But the first few times you see it, I think it really, like it works. You know, I think just the way it's put together works, and I think they do a really good job of matching everything. Like just the editing is seamless. The performances are seamless. You know, it doesn't feel like they shot multiple angles or they had to shoot it again from different angles. It really feels like it's all flowing naturally. And I really like that. I think it's really well done. I think part of the reason too why I really appreciate this episode, and this is like more behind the scenes, sentimental reason than anything else, is that my buddy Dan, who first got me to watch the show and first got me into podcasting in the first place about, oh, over 10 years ago now, it was 2010. He watched this. He went to Columbia University in Chicago for film school, and he had a professor who sat them down one day and played this episode and was like, "This is what we're doing today. You have to watch this. This is how you write a good episode of TV." And he
Super
sat them
cool.
down and they did that. And I mean, such a cool story. And I remember Dan telling me about this and me being like, yeah, no, your professor is right. Like, I agree with you. So I think there's a huge part of me that is very sentimental about this episode because that was a real conversation him and I had about filmmaking and that whole experience. Because obviously this episode feels very, you know, Tarantino, it feels kind of Reservoir Dogs-ish, which is obviously the one everybody goes to, but there's so many other movies that do stuff like this. And I think that's a huge reason it stands out. I did look at IMDb, and this is one of three episodes with an 8.3 rating. The other episode is the season one finale, and which I think is solid. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And the other one it's tied with is Today's the Day Part 2, which you and I were talking about earlier, is actually the episode that is tied with this episode as my favorite episode of the show. I think they're both just as solid. And those three are all tied for an 8.3. But the highest rated episode is the series finale, the season two finale, Born to Run, at 8.9.
Really?
Yeah, which is very surprising. I don't know if I fully disagree with that rating, considering I would rate this episode a 9. But I think that's I think that was very interesting to me. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Yeah, I like what you had to say about this. This episode does a good job of creating tension, not only because of the format being different, but just with what's happening in the episode. There's a lot of good tension moments as well. I think as far as the choice to edit this episode the way they did, it does do a really good job of you're wondering, ooh, is there something happening off screen that I'm missing? When I get to someone else's story, are they going to show me a new part of this that some profound thing happened? And I think after watching it a few times through, I guess the only disappointing part is that there isn't anything absurdly profound that, you know, they don't show you off screen until later.
Sure.
Ultimately, it works more as an editing technique to create an unknown element of switching between people, but there's no profound knives out type of thing happening in the background that you're unaware of, right?
Right, I agree. I think the only thing that could even qualify for that as far as this episode is the whole secret that Riley's keeping, which watching this episode with that lens, you watch her actions and her motives and what she says very differently, I think. And we're trying to avoid spoilers because last week we did a minute of spoilers. My wife was almost spoiled and she got very mad at me. But but yeah, I think knowing that ahead of time and watching this episode is a very different experience. And I think that that extra thing that you're talking about, when you first watch it, you don't even know it's there. But going back to watch it, you're like, oh, there is something else there that we're not seeing, and there's a reason we're not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I guess there is a lot of different parts in this episode. I guess, was there any specific part you wanted to zoom in on to start with here?
Well, I think we should start with the guy we always forget. Let's start with Ellison.
Ellison is a big part of this episode.
Yeah, he gets a lot to do, and he finally gets this closure, the sense of closure, at least, in a way, with the Connors, where he actually is involved in a way that's productive and beneficial and doesn't lead Cromarty to them exactly, which is great. But more than that, I think he finally understands what it is Sarah does, and she explains that to him, right? That's like the whole thing in the last scene, which is just a heartbreaking scene, and we'll get to Sarah's part in all of that in a minute. But Ellison is really a rock in this episode, I think. And I really like that they added him. They could have easily written him out of this episode completely and Cromarty not have interacted with him and just written it around him being at Zero Corp or whatever, so that the events of this don't even matter to his life. And then Sarah later maybe tells him, or someone later tells him that, oh, Cromarty's gone. Or Weaver even shows Cromarty's body or whatever it is. And that's a spoiler. But regardless, I think putting him in this episode was a really smart decision. And I'm really glad that they did. And I think it's hard when you're in an ensemble cast like this and you don't get to interact with anyone else.
Yeah.
And he plays it so well and he does such a good job, but I'm so glad that he actually did. And it's been 8 episodes. It's been almost a whole season, well, if you're considering the first season, since he's interacted with them. And so I think that was really cool. Also, I love the moment between him and Sarah where he thanks her for saving his life, because obviously that has, it's been a long time since that happened.
So. Yeah, for sure. I think one of the best lines from him in this show that just really gets to the core of what he's going through throughout the show in general, he asks Sarah, he goes, I want to know what my place is in all of this.
Yeah.
Because he's been given this knowledge that no one else really has, and he understands and accepts where we're going to in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he feels so much on the fringe of that, on the outside of that, and that a lot of that is because he's trying to protect Sarah and not lead anybody to her. But we also see Sarah push him out too, even in this moment too. It's interesting to me that it seems like he's really longing to be more involved in all of this, but Sarah doesn't want him there, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting to me too. And I don't really understand why. I get that she is very protective of John, and I get that she doesn't want others to have to deal with this burden. But if it's somebody who already knows and somebody who's willing to help, it's kind of odd to me that she doesn't. But also, just because of how distrusting Sarah is, I guess it isn't really that odd. Yeah, I don't know. But I agree. I think him trying to figure out his place in all of this, and obviously as the season goes on, he kind of starts to. I think this is a really good jumping point for his arc for the rest of the show.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it gets him out of this weird funk that he's been in the last 8 episodes, where he doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know why he is, and he's not a part of the FBI, so he's not tracking down Sarah and John or them. He's really essentially doing nothing. I mean, we've talked about it so many times, we always forget about the Allison plot because there really isn't much of one, and it's really a shame because of how great an actor he is, and more than that, how great a character he is. And now is finally when we get to start seeing that from now on, which is really great. So,
yeah, this episode was really critical to both move him forward as well as give context to what happened before, I think.
Yeah. I fully agree. I also really love that he goes down to Mexico to save John. He just doesn't even think twice about it. He just does it. And it just shows what kind of man he is. I mean, he is. He's a really good man, just deep down. And he wants to do what's right, no matter the cost, no matter what right means. And I don't know. I always really appreciate that about James Ellison.
Absolutely. We love that character. I guess one of the other things I noticed, at first we see John call Riley to say, hey, I'll be there in a few minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember he didn't give her a date or anything. And I go, wait, they're not doing a code thing anymore. And obviously they can't do the date thing because that got figured out. But then I noticed they did later on. They were like hitting 1 and 2 or something like that on the phone to make the tone. So they did add in a new code, which was cool. But I guess on that topic too, how disturbing was it in the beginning of this episode when we see Cameron go into John's room in sort of a purposefully seductive way? I think that's kind
of
like,
I don't think it's sort of. I think it was like she takes off the clothes before she walks in.
I think this is kind of the first time where they start to play around with that, and it opens up the door for some interesting connotations for maybe what happens in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
does or does not happen.
It's definitely not the first time that they play around with this, because, I mean, the whole premiere is her confessing her love for John to not get her chip taken out, right? So it's like, she's played with his emotions before.
Uncomfortable sexual tension moments for sure. This one really leans into it a lot.
Yeah, it's a landmark, to the point where when we were watching it, Hannah's like, why is she such a freak? Because she says that every time Cameron does anything. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, it's so interesting. What you were saying about the connotations about what happens in the future, the way Cameron talks, it sounds like she is John's most trusted confidant in the future, more than anybody. And it kind of makes you wonder, and I don't know this, kind of makes you wonder. Is she talking about Allison? Or is she talking about Cameron?
Yeah, there's that element to it. And yeah, you're wondering how intimate it really is. And you can see it on John's face. He's like uncomfortable about it, about who he is in the future and how lonely he becomes in the future.
Right. And he's also very, like, turned on at the same time.
Are we only talking in the future? Like, he doesn't even really want to know the answer to it because he doesn't press about it further.
Right.
I think you see him like think about it for a bit, but like he gets uncomfortable to where he has to change the subject and he has to like tell her, I'm going to bed, you know, to get her out of the room and then go to Riley.
Well, and
is where that ends up.
And it's foreshadowed too at the beginning of the episode when Sarah tells Cameron, I don't like how he responds to you.
Yep.
And Cameron's like, well, you get your results. Isn't it what you wanted?
It's so ex machina and it's so uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable, and it's just so confusing because, like John says, like, you don't have emotions, all that, right? But are we sure? I don't know.
Right.
Because Cameron seems to get jealous, and Cameron seems to actually kind of care about John, and it sounds like maybe more was going on in the future with Cameron and John, and whether that was Cameron pretending to be Allison with John before John finds out and sends her back in time, or actually Cameron and John, like, we just don't know enough about the future at this point in time to make that decision.
Is Cameron even completely making up that they talk about it in the future?
Right.
Like, there's that too. Like, is she just saying what she knows will, like, pique his interest into, like, what are you to me in the future? Like, we don't know. It could be that too.
And she's not like Arnold's Terminator at all. Like, when John asked him questions, he gave immediate and clear and concise answers. There was no ambiguousness. There's no hidden meanings. There's no subtext. But with Cameron, you almost have to read into everything because you never know. She's just such a different model.
Very different, and it really is great and clever how ambiguous they leave this part, because it opens the door for to have all these kind of questions in your own head, and the intrigue is there. And I, as awkward as that moment is, I do like, I don't necessarily like, the idea of them having anything more than this awkwardness. I think some of the fan art you and I have talked about, there's been a lot of like a lot of fans, I think, did like the idea of this being more of a romantic relationship. I'm not as big on that myself, for John's character at least. Right. But I do like the interesting parts of like seeing him question it and seeing him think through it a little bit here.
Yeah.
Just because of how disturbing it really is. It, you know, to go back to the ex machina thing, it's so reminiscent of that.
It's just really disturbing, to be honest. And it's hard. It's very hard to figure out what the motive is. And what, beyond even what the motive is, just like how John is supposed to respond.
You know?
I mean, he's a teenage boy. And so she is adapting to the situation, knowing that he is a hormonal teenage boy, right? And it's not the first time or the last time. Well, it is the first time, maybe. Well, no, it's not really the first time, because she did it in the pilot when she acted normal for 5 seconds. It's not the first time or the last time she's done that with John. And so it just really makes you question her loyalties. And we already know Sarah doesn't really trust Cameron, but for whatever reason, John implicitly does. And we'd never really get a reason why. And so, I don't know. It's really unfortunate that this show ends at the end of this season, because there's so many questions that we're just kind of left with that we don't have full answers to, and that's a little bit hard at times. But the show is still worth it, obviously. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't.
I feel like John trusts her so much in the same way that he latches on to anyone who comes into his life who isn't his mother.
Well, that's true.
Who's just always been there and is just always controlling, and for him to have anything else to talk to
which how
is
sad
just
is
the
that?
Absolute best thing ever. Yeah, no, it's super sad, but I mean, you also understand where he's coming from at that point,
right?
And especially with how connected he was with the T-800 and yep. T-2, I think for him to have another one of these in his life, albeit very different, he's really latching on to that. And of course, Charlie as well was another big one.
Yep. Derek.
Derek also, although Derek's been very much out of the picture lately.
Which Cameron mentions.
Mm-hmm.
She confronts him about it, and he doesn't really give her an answer.
I like that interaction. I like that interaction, and I like how their relationship is always so, like, confrontational and hostile.
Yes.
They do not like each other. And I like that in this show.
Yeah, no, they...
The moments you get with them together are pretty funny.
They don't like each other at all, and it's great. And it makes sense. Like, obviously, Sarah doesn't like Cameron, but Sarah knows how to use Cameron. Whereas Derek is just freaked out by Cameron. go ahead.
Well, I was going to switch gears for a minute. In terms of, I like what you were talking about with how different Cameron's Terminator is from Arnold's T-800.
Yeah.
And that stood out to me again in this episode. Between the T-800 and the T-888, when Sarah was in the back of the car and she's having like a back and forth conversation with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you start to think about, I can't picture Arnold's T-800 doing this. Now, granted, it would in the case of T-2, where it's on the same side, right?
Sure.
But if it was T-1 Terminator, it wouldn't be having a back and forth conversation with a person that it captured.
No.
It would just monotone, go through the motions, like go to the next objective, right? Which is much more menacing and scary.
Absolutely it is. And honestly, what makes the Terminator such an amazing horror villain, because he is like Michael Myers. There's no it's like what Kyle says in the first movie. There's no negotiating with it. You can't plead with it. You can't bargain with it. It will just kill you. That's all it knows how to do. And truthfully, you know, obviously we know that 888s are different than T-800s.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they're specifically meant for infiltration, which is why the Ellison model was sent back an episode ago, which is why Vic was sent back, which is why all these other models are sent back, right? And I don't remember the one of the in the nuclear facility. I don't remember which one that was called. But Greenway, maybe? Actually, I think that's what it was. Anyway, these models are all sent back for those missions, and so they're able to blend in as much as they have to. But with a Terminator like Cromartie, who is a AAA, and we don't really know exactly what model Cameron is. We know she's not a 888, probably, because she's different, and she has blue eyes at times. Not all the time, but sometimes. But Cromartie is for sure a 888.
Right.
And like what we've said before, and what we've theorized or hypothesized before, when he traveled through time with the Connors, his head was blown off. I still think, and I think this episode is great reasoning for that, I still think that his chip, something was switched in his chip during that interaction.
He can be a little more independent,
yep.
A little bit more introspective,
yep.
A little bit more talkative, just
yes,
different.
Exactly. You know? Well, he's developing a personality because he is his own AI. He's not just a Skynet. A Skynet. What's the word?
Drone
proxy.
Tool proxy. Okay.
Yeah. Skynet proxy.
And with him asking Sarah if Cameron's chip has been damaged too, that kind of like further points to the fact that maybe his is, and he's wondering about hers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that as well. I really love that they chose to go in the direction of having this new model, the T-888, because that opens the door to where you don't have to compare it so directly to Arnold's Terminator. You can let them be separate and accept it much easier.
Yep.
Because It would be so frustrating to accept this show if you were having to watch it with the idea of, like, this is not Arnold's Terminator. This is not what I saw in the movies, right? If you saw it with those lens, you would feel a little bit cheated. You'd be like, this doesn't feel like the same thing. It doesn't have the same feel.
Yeah.
But now we get to watch it under the lens of, yeah, no, this is a different model, right?
Well I feel like Skynet, the way that Skynet works, and again, this is completely a theory, but it seems like when you look at Terminators and like Terminator Salvation, what is it, the T-600s that are the ones who are walking around Los Angeles, right?
I think so, yeah.
You look at the T-600s, and then you
look at primitive ones, yeah.
Yeah, super primitive. The only reason that they look humanoid at all, and Skynet stops using hunter-killers or the other things that you see in T3, is because it's just easier to maneuver and look human, right, when you're walking at night and stuff like that. And then from there, Skynet moves on to the T-800, which can actually look human and can somewhat blend in as long as he doesn't talk very much. And then you think, oh, well, then Skynet moves to the 888s, and the 888s like can actually infiltrate. These are actual infiltrators who can actually get in there and do their job. And then you even think about the T-1000s and T-1001s that can not only look like anything but can get in anywhere. I mean, Skynet is just every different model is building a perfect, a better, more perfect machine. You even think about Terminator Genesis, with John Connor becomes a T, I think it's 5,000 or it's 3,000. It's one of the two. And not only is he a blend of man and machine with John's memories and Skynet's motives, but he can get anywhere too. I mean, even more so than the T-1000 can. And so it's like every different model is becoming a better killer. And I mean, I know we're talking about different timelines here. We're talking about all these different timelines here. So Skynet is different in each of these timelines, at least a little bit, because that's the nature of timelines, but it's the same idea. And you see that especially, I think, on this show, when you compare it to Terminator 1 and Terminator 2, and then you compare it to the 888s and the T-1001s and even Cameron's model and all of that. So I just think it's very interesting.
It is. And I like how they utilize it in this show, and it makes it easier to accept both the argumentation for, hey, this is not the same actor for this Terminator.
Right.
But also the personality is completely different, but it still works because it gets to be different, right?
Yep.
They're not relying on what was before.
Also, it's scarier because it can be anyone. I mean, the Ellison Terminator proves that, right? So Skynet could send anyone back. And again, there has to be some sort of genetic template for him to do that, which makes me think in the future, Ellison is either part of the Resistance or part of Skynet or a prisoner or something. But it's just, it's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Or that Terminator came back and kidnapped a plastic surgeon and built him an Ellison.
I think what's interesting about that too with Cromartie is I don't think Cromartie would have done that if his chip wasn't flipped. Not because I don't think he'd be smart enough or have to know how to do that. I'm sure Skynet programs all that in. I just don't think he'd care enough about blending it. Like, I think he would just dress the way that Cromartie does until he gets a body and go and kill whoever he needs to go and kill. And maybe that isn't true, but I don't know. That was kind of my thought watching it this time around.
Yeah, I could see that.
Should we talk about John and Riley?
Yes, we should.
I think Riley loves John. I think that is true. I think obviously she has ulterior motives that we'll talk about later. But I think like she actually cares about him. Like, I think that's real. I don't know if John loves Riley. I don't think knows. I don't think he knows what love means.
No, I don't think so. And I think you can, I don't know. You can definitely see and relate to just the teenage, like, I want to be with her even more now because, you know, you guys are telling me I can't be with her kind of thing. Like, right. That's such a common feeling at that age, you know. And even more so for John being in the special situation that he is, living the special life that he does. It's even worse.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he has not had enough life experience, certainly, or time with her to know what he does or doesn't love or anything else. And of course, Sarah, being a mature woman, she knows what's best for him, and also knows that a lot of what he's feeling is just a teenagery feeling that, in the grand scheme of things, of where he needs to be, is not what he needs right now.
Right. Yeah, I think too, it's interesting to me. Obviously, John wants to open up to Riley, but he has a hard time.
Yeah.
So he uses this trip to Mexico as an excuse to, hey, I'm opening up to you by showing you this part of my life that literally no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge step for John. Huge step. Not something he takes lightly, and not something he's really done with anybody else ever. And then he goes and books his honeymoon suite?
The way he brings it up, too, like, ooh.
Like, it's a sure thing.
Yeah. He's got it in the bag.
I'm sorry, John. How cocky are you? What?
Yeah. He, like, doesn't he bring it up on the bus that he booked that?
Yeah.
On the way there. Like, you would think the smarter move might be to, like, not say anything directly about it. Oh, we're just going to Mexico. And then you get there and, you know, oh, looks like they only had the honeymoon suite. I guess we're here. Like, that would be the smoother way to do it. But he just, like, lays the cards out on the table. It's like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. It's very bold move on John's part. Very, also kind of out of character. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think he's at such a breaking point in this moment. Like, he just needs to get out and do something crazy, right? And put it all out there. Feel independent.
Well, and he's probably a virgin too, so he feels the need to, like, get that done. And
Yep. Frustrated. Wants to feel in control. He doesn't care what his mom thinks. Just needs to get out and go.
Right.
So, I mean, it's believable that he's acting this way.
Sure.
Choosing to do this.
Yeah, it's just a very impulsive teenager thing to do. And it's these moments, you know, it's funny that this episode is one of my favorites, and then Today's the Day Part 2 is one of my favorites, because I think Today is the Day Part 2 is one of my favorites because, and we'll get there, and I won't spoil anything, but it's one of the best examples in the show of him actually acting like the future leader of the Resistance, John Connor.
Yeah.
And it's just so well done. I mean, and once we get there, you'll all know the scene that I'm talking about, but then you watch this episode and he is the furthest thing from that. He's just like a normal teenager until he has to get into action. And then his mind switches. Like, there's like nothing. And he's like, Riley, you have to leave right now.
Yeah.
Like right now. And it's almost heartbreaking in a way, because John wants so badly to be a normal teenager that he does this normal teenager reckless thing. I mean, if you've ever watched an episode of Veronica Mars, which takes place outside of LA in some coastal California town somewhere, the teenagers in that show go down to Mexico and party all the time. Like, just about any LA-based teenager show, you will eventually, even the new season of Cobra Kai, Miguel goes, spoiler alert, Miguel goes to Mexico to find his dad. Yeah. And I'm like,
the OC as well.
It's just a normal LA West Coast thing to do is, oh, we're teenagers and we're edgy and we're going to go to Mexico. And John tries so hard to fit into that mold. And then he's down there and immediately everything goes to hell because he's John Connor. And he's reminded about that because they remember, you're John Connor, not John Baum. You are John Connor. And he's found out. And not only that, but then he's found by the Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets even worse. So it's just like the perfect storm of events in John's life that just culminates. Honestly, it's just the perfect example of this perfect storm in John's life.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, it's the best episode that shows that. If you wanted one episode that shows, what is John Connor's arc on the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, watch this episode, because it shows it from beginning to end, what he wants and where he has to be because of fate, you know? And it's like,
yep.
It's so good. It's so well done, his arc in this episode. And just even how it ends with him having to be there for his mom because she's always been there for him and he always has to be there for her because that's his role. You know, and it comes right after Ellison asks, what's my role in all this? And Sarah's like, well, this is my role to protect him. And then John steps into his role of being there for his mom because that's what he's always had to do. I mean, you see that even in T2 where he has to go rescue her. You know, it's like, it's always been his role. And it's just so, oh my gosh, it's just so well crafted the way that they mm-hmm. figure all that out.
Yeah, I love the idea of a self-contained arc within this episode that's reflective of his arc in the overall story as well. I love their little setting in the festival as well, yeah. with all the skulls, of yeah. course, which are littering, you know, the streets and everything in the future.
Yep, Riley and mentions I guess she doesn't like skulls.
And there's it's the festival of, like, skulls and darkness or something like that, which, of course, is the future unless you're in Terminator Salvation, then it's the skulls in daytime. So.
Yeah, yep. Every other Terminator movie, it's nighttime, but but in Salvation, for some reason, it's the day. It's, that's yeah. right. Except for that one scene where Marcus escapes the resistance compound and it's night.
Right.
And it's like, this is the one scene in the movie that didn't need to be at night. And we wanted the rest to be at night.
Yeah. No, it's true. Unfortunately, the movie really starts to lose some of its momentum in that moment, too, for some reason.
Yeah. It gains it back, though, by the end.
Yeah. It has its moments in the end.
It's true.
So, speaking of the end, let me ask you, because I do like stylistically how sure. this ends. I think it looks great. It's a lot of fun. It's very dramatic. But does it feel a little, I guess, lore-breaking to you how easy they kill this thing? I mean, you start thinking about Arnold walking towards the whole SWAT team.
Sure.
Right, in T2. Who is supposedly not even as tough of a Terminator as a T-888? I don't know.
Well, maybe his endoskeleton is tougher than 888's because 888's have to be infiltrators. So Skynet assumes
My
that
goodness.
They are softer because they're more like humans.
This thing sure gets taken apart pretty easy with that shotgun. It makes you wonder, yeah, maybe they're not as tough. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would have been nice if it was something else other than the shotgun that just tore its face off, right? Maybe if they just, like, stunned it enough to get close to it and then rip its head off some other way, you yeah. know?
Okay, riddle me this. What if the reason the skin gets blown off so easily is because of the way Cromartie got his skin back in the first place? What if it's not as well-defined as the way Skynet does it in the future, and so it's not as tough?
I don't have a problem with the skin, though. I mean, Arnold's skin comes off really easy as well. But when you see the shotgun start hitting his face, it's like tearing out chunks of the metal.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Like his metal on his head is getting torn away. And that just seems not consistent with what we've seen from Terminators and other media.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, maybe time traveling to the future really wrecked his face.
It weakened his alloy.
Well, it could have. I mean, and the only reason I say that is because when he does travel, when his head does go Ooh. Through, remember, there's no skin on it.
Or what if when he, there's that. But then he also spent some time in the salt water. He sunk down to the bottom.
Yep. That could have also corroded it.
And it corroded it because it got in through his nose, right? And his nose holes in his mouth. You know, would go down into
all
his
all the orifices.
Yep.
I think there's an in-universe way to explain it. I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. But I think we I think we can get around it in universe, even if it feels a little cheap.
Yep.
Obviously, they were going for style more than they were substance with the final fight, and that's okay because it looks. I mean, it's so cool, and John getting that final shot. I mean, it's just like it's so epic.
The kill shot. I like it.
And that's the end of Cromartie. Like, actually, the end of
The
Cromartie.
end of Cromartie.
Which is really cool, because they'd been building to it for so long. And I'm glad that they didn't try and keep him for the whole show.
Yeah.
I think that would have felt cheap. I feel like that would have felt like they were trying too hard to keep the actor, you know?
Yeah.
But what they do instead, which, again, we won't spoil a whole lot here, but what they do instead, I think, is really smart and really, it works. It's like how bringing back Arnold in T2 doesn't disregard Arnold in T1. Because
Right.
it's a different model, right? So it's like, they did it the right way.
Yep. But then bringing him back in T3 felt like a hokey thing that, like, was just a rehash of 2 and a cash grab. there's also that.
There is also that, but I also still love it, so I'm going to let it slide.
Terminator 3, the Jurassic Park 3 of Terminator movies, where it's just okay. But also gets a little bit more hated than it probably should.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we can talk about it more in terms of what they do further on in this season. I do think that now that Cromartie's gone, you know, they do some great things with that later on. But then I think you and I both know, I think this might be where it gets a little bit off the rails moving forward.
Well, and that's mostly due to Sarah's arc, right? So Sarah, at the end of this episode,
Sarah's arc.
She breaks down and
they
she
don't know what
freaks
to do
out.
With
Well, and I really like how they set it up here.
Mm-hmm.
The way they set it up is really good with her breaking down because she's like, wow, I actually almost lost John this time. And just like losing it because of that. I mean, what a powerful way to end an episode. I don't know of a more powerful ending of an episode. It's just so, so well done. But you're right. They just don't know what to do with Sarah for the majority of the rest of the season, which is really hard in a show called The Sarah Connor Chronicles, because you want her to be your lead character. You want your lead character to be your strongest character. I mean, how many shows do you know where your strongest character is the supporting character because the lead is like kind of weak?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, there's other shows where it's the opposite. You know, your lead character is the strongest and everyone else is kind of weak, which is also bad for other reasons. But in a show with so many strong supporting characters, it's tough having Sarah as one of your weaker characters for the majority of your second season. And I don't know, maybe that was a reason why ratings dropped and they ended up canceling the show. I don't know.
Well, we'll get there when we get there, I guess. Did you have any extra thoughts for this episode, Michael?
No, I mean, I just really like it. I think it's really well done. I think everyone has a very good arc. I think the stakes are very high. And I think very much like the pilot of the show, it's one of those episodes that really feels like it could be a Terminator movie.
I agree.
So, yeah, those are my final thoughts. Mr. Ferguson is ill today, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know why it's called that, is a reference to the pilot when Cromartie says, Mr. Ferguson is ill today, before he takes roll and then tries to shoot John. That's actually where that comes from. So it's mimicking his first appearance because it's his last appearance, so which is pretty cool. So,
yeah, love it.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us on this most recent episode of No Fate, a Terminator podcast. We're trying to figure out what we're going to do next. We might take a little break from the Sarah Connor Chronicles and have a few guests on and do some extra stuff, or we might continue with the show. We haven't decided yet, so stay tuned for the next episode where we will hopefully be figuring that out. But until then, you can find all our old episodes on nofatepodcast.com, where you can also contact us and leave us your thoughts on either this episode, any of the previous episodes or movies we've talked about, or any of the future episodes. Again, we want to emphasize you guys can send in your thoughts or questions on future episodes, and we'll read them on air and talk about what you guys had to say, because that helps us figure out what we want to say, which is really fun. So appreciate that. You can also follow us on Twitter at nofatepodcast. At No Fate Pod. That is at No Fate Pod. And you can also find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Audible, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and just about every podcast host you can possibly think of. So until then, thank you guys for joining us. And if you're listening to this,
you are the resistance.